Jeremy was a freshman in college, and he did very well in high school. He was bright, and he was funny, and he got good grades. And he went back to college, a freshman in college. He began his college career around this time of year. And he put together his first composition paper, and he got it back, and he got a C, which puzzled him because that was kind of a low grade for him. So the next assignment for that same class, he read different books, and he changed how he did the footnotes, and he changed the way in which the paper was formatted and all sorts of things, and he got a C minus. So in his next paper, he changed the spacing on the page. He changed how far apart the lines were. He changed everything he could think of in the paper, trying to read the professor's mind, and it turned out that he got a D. Now, it turns out that the problem was not with all the things that Jeremy fixed, but with his whole method, that he was not answering the questions that were placed before him by the professor. Yet Jeremy never asked the professor what he was doing wrong. He never asked her, "What is it that you're looking for?" And had he asked, he would have found out that all the things that he was doing were not the problem with his paper, and he would have improved his grade immediately. As it was, he was running around trying to improve things that did not need improvement. And so it is in Isaiah 58 with the people of God and worship. We know what we like in worship, but how often do we ask what God likes in worship? Have we ever asked ourselves, what is it that God really wants us to do in worship? And chapter 58 in Isaiah is very interesting because it starts out with a conversation between the people of God and God himself. This is a little bit before the verse that we picked up with, 9b. This is in the beginning part of chapter 58. But the people of Israel are coming to worship, and they are faithful in their worship. And they are fasting, and they're singing hymns in praise of God. But God does not seem to answer their prayers. So they ask him in verse 3, "Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why do we humble ourselves, but you do not notice?" And the Lord's answer is this: "Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day. You oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high." So, paraphrasing a little bit, the people of God have puffed themselves up. They've gone to worship and made themselves feel good about themselves, about their worship. But they haven't made their actions meet what they say in worship. They haven't treated their employees with justice. They haven't stopped quarreling, but they've been fighting and engaging in acts of violence and in words full of hate. But they still expect God to hear them because they have worshiped properly. Now, on the one hand, it's very easy to see what Isaiah is talking about here. It's very easy to do worship properly. It's also very easy to do worship improperly. If a congregation is used to a particular style of worship, say, saying the Lord's Prayer every Sunday, well, if you want to worship properly with that congregation, you say the Lord's Prayer every Sunday. If you are used to having the old gospel hymns, then you sing those every Sunday. If the congregation is used to a band, then you have a band. If drama is often used in worship, then you make sure there's a skit. And the easiest way to make people complain about worship is therefore the opposite. If they're used to saying the Lord's Prayer every Sunday, then you skip it a few weeks. If they're used to having a band, then you tell the band that their services aren't required anymore. But But what all this overlooks is that no one in this trying to figure out what makes good worship for us doesn't really think about what makes good worship for God. And in Isaiah 58, God himself tells us what he likes about worship. In verse 6, God says, "This is the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, to bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin." God tells us right there that this is the fast that God chooses: to do justice, to undo the burdens and oppressions, to break everything that weighs people down, to give bread to the hungry, to share housing with the homeless poor, to clothe the naked, and not to say to anyone, "I don't need you, I don't want you, I don't have any interest in you because you are poor, or because you are someone who is not of the same class as I am." Indeed, God in Isaiah 58 calls the poor your own kin. Then in the next part of the passage, the second half, deals with celebrating the Sabbath. And we tend to define the Sabbath as having a day off, as sitting in a recliner, as something we must do for our psychological health. Working too much is bad for you. Working too much is something that will cause the middle age spread. Working too much is something that will cause some psychological damage and stress. But in the Bible, it's not about finding a day of rest only. It's about the Sabbath being a foundation for economic justice. Indeed, in Exodus chapter 20, God says to people through Moses, the reason you're to observe a Sabbath is because you were once slaves in Egypt and the Egyptians worked you too hard, and you are never again to oppress people in the way in which you yourselves were oppressed. In Deuteronomy 5, God makes it very clear, again, the Ten Commandments, that this day is to be a day of rest for you, but not you yourselves only, but for your slaves and for your employees and for your work animals. So the primary sin, as far as I can see it in Isaiah chapter 58, is rampant individuality. That the primary sin in Isaiah 58 is concentrating everything on me. Worship is about me. Observing the Sabbath is about me. Everything is about me, and there's nothing that has to deal with others. Now, most scholars agree that Isaiah 58 probably deals with the year 520 before the birth of our Lord Jesus. And it's about a time when the people were coming back into the promised land after a generation of being away from it. The Babylonians had come in, and in a warrior mode, they had destroyed Jerusalem and had destroyed much of the religious and economic life of the Israelites. The temple had been destroyed, the markets had been destroyed, the streets had no names, they were unpaved because they were all destroyed by the Babylonian invasion. And the Babylonians were very punitive about this. They wanted to make sure that the Israelites could not rise up again, could not rise up and defend themselves. So they made sure that the blacksmiths' homes were burned to the ground, and the blacksmiths couldn't forge weapons and things like that. They took everything of value out of the temple so that no weapons could be made, so that no worship accoutrements could be made, and so on and so forth. Now, a generation later, the Israelites are starting to come back into the promised land. They're starting to rebuild the temple. They're paving their streets again. They're starting to forge weapons. And they have to ask themselves the question, how do we rebuild a community that has been destroyed? Do we build it on the cult of personality of one priest who says that they have God's ear, and if you just come and worship in the way which I tell you, then God will hear us? Or do we build the community on neighborliness? That's the choice. That's the question that is laid before the Israelites. And Isaiah answers it in this way. Isaiah says that you don't have free access to God, people of Israel. You do not have free access to God unless you go through the neighbor. It is not about God and you in the corner having some private conversation. Instead, the only way that you can approach the Lord is through the neighbor, as frustrating and as annoying as that neighbor may be, as much demands as they may put upon you. The neighbor, especially the poor and the weak, is not a distraction or an afterthought to the spiritual life. It is only, according to Isaiah, through the neighbor that you will get to know God. And if you want to continue, says Isaiah, to have relationship with God, it's got to be through the neighbor. And if you believe that you can have an individual relationship to God through singing the right hymns or through worshiping in the so-called correct way, you are repeating the mistakes of the past. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Jeffrey Canada. He is a social worker of sorts. He's the leader of something called the Harlem Children's Zone. He was born in the Bronx, and probably 20 or so years ago, he started a movement that has blossomed into the Harlem Children's Zone. He had worked in Harlem, and his whole point was trying to get children out of poverty. And one of the things that he noticed was the system was not working in Harlem. That they would wait until children caused a problem, and then they would be sent to the guidance counselor. Or once they applied for food stamps, then people would try and counsel the family into moving them up a step. But often, Jeffrey Canada discovered, that was too late. That was too late. The foundations of poverty had already started, and that the people who were coming for assistance were put into this bureaucratic system and were looked at as numbers, were looked at as problems to be solved. There was very little interest taken in them as who they were. So, in other words, these children who were living in poverty were seen as a number or as a problem to be solved in Central Harlem. Where Jeffrey Canada had the big insight, where he has made quite a name for himself and for the Harlem Children's Zone program, is they have taken interest in that child as a person from birth until 18. What they do is they go around, they've taken a 100-block area in Harlem, and they have tried to get poor parents in Harlem, everybody that they can talk to, into a parenting program from the time that child is born. It's something they call baby college. And they teach parents how to parent. Because from 0 to 3, poor children hear half as many words as children from upper class and middle class backgrounds. Poor children are disciplined more severely than upper class and middle class children in the United States. So the baby college is trying to teach the parents to parent properly, to parent in a particular way that will benefit the children down the road, and they follow them all the way through their life, not just as a lifesaver here or there when you get into trouble, but the whole way down their education, all the way to 18. 100% of Harlem Children Zone kindergartners in a program called Harlem GEM were at grade level for 7 years running. 87% of the same children years later in eighth grade were at the state level in math. And they're supported not by these huge, gigantic churches with a lot of resources, but they're supported by little churches, foundations. They're supported by individual donations of people. And the goal is to reach every child in 100 blocks. The good news of Isaiah, the hard good news, is that God is available to you. God is available to you, but not in looking at the neighbor as a problem, Not in looking at the neighbor as someone we've got to find a solution to their life, but rather taking interest in the neighbor as your neighbor. God is available to you, to each and every one of us, not in our prayer closet or not alone when we sing our hymns, but rather through the poor neighbor, through economic justice, through satisfying the needs of the hungry and the poor and the afflicted. And if we apply ourselves to finding a way to approach the neighbor, to learn the neighbor's name, to reach out in love and justice to the neighbor, then God will reveal Himself to us in ways that we cannot conceive of today, nor possibly imagine. Amen.